Hey, everybody. It is May 3rd, first Monday in May. April's done. How about that? I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and we're going to have Dr. Howie Knopf here today. Our good friend has been with us many, many times. Howie is a true expert on so many things psychological in schools, and we're going to be talking with him today about how to plan for next year, all right, and talking about the impact on planning of SEL, mindfulness, trauma-informed education, okay, positive behaviorally based, informed education, every form system, that kind of thing. So it's going to be really a nice show, and Howie will be joining us in just a second. As you know, Education Talk Radio is the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. We archive all our shows at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, and that, of course, is also where every podcast is, where our new magazine is, Equity and Access. That's over there. It's an online journal. You'll really enjoy looking through that. It really is a good magazine, I got to tell you. Plus all the information, et cetera, all about Equity and Access, pre-K-12 at ace-ed.org. And then all the way from Arkansas, we have the one and only Howie Knopf. Hi, Howie.
Well, hello. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine today, my friend. How you doing? Everything good down there?
Everything is great. We've got a lot of planning to do for the end of the year, into the summer, and in the new school year.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, it's funny. I was just talking to the National Council for the Social Studies on the show that preceded this. We were saying how everybody says, oh, you know, things are going to be different from now on. We're making big changes. We've learned a lot from this year, et cetera, et cetera. And we discussed, you know, what have we learned and how are we going to plan and is that actually happening? That's why today's show is so terrific, using the year's lessons learned to prepare for the new school year. And Howie, you wanted me to mention this, and you wrote, and Howie, by the way, is the president of Project Achieve at projectachieve.net and is the past president of the National Association of School Psychologists and a million other things we can talk about. Check out projectachieve.net. But you wrote a monograph, you called it, called The Mirage Behind Trauma-Informed SEL, Mindfulness, and PBIS. All right, so why don't we start there, Howie? What do we need to do to get ready for next year, and do those things have something to do with it?
Well, those things have absolutely everything to do with it, and the real focus is a local focus. You know, we have all of these national frameworks. We've got all these national programs. We've got a lot of things that are running around. We've got people that are selling different things.
Yeah.
We've got global generalizations in terms of trauma and pandemic slide and all of that. And the bottom line is that all education ultimately is local. And what today is about,
Thank you, Tip O'Knopf.
and what today's program really is to encourage our schools and our districts to look at their students, their staff, their resources, their curriculum. And if we're going to start the new year, we've got to start now. So one of the themes is at the beginning of the new school year starts in May. And we've got to look at our students' progress, the data, and the lessons learned from our students this year at the local level and begin planning and articulating for next year.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I was talking to Katie Anthes, who's the state superintendent of Colorado, on a show, I think, last week or maybe the week before, and she was saying she wants to do assessments, but she doesn't want them to be used, quote, for grading, per se. She wants to literally see where they are so that they can plan for next year, and that's the whole thing. We've got to know where they are now. Okay, or when the school year ends, et cetera. And when you say that it's time now to plan for the next year, Howie, this is important. Who do you see doing the planning? Because teachers, believe me, by the way, it's Teacher Appreciation Week. Happy, thank you, teachers. You're wonderful. Okay, especially always, but especially this year. But, you know, how do we plan? Who's going to do that, Howie? Because, you know, they need time off. Okay, they do. It's been crazy. Okay, summer's coming down south where you are in Arkansas. Probably the schools
sure.
end earlier than they do up here. Okay,
sure.
So who does this planning? How's the information going to be gathered in order to do the planning with the right people? I'll leave it at that. Talk.
All right. So I'm going to open up the Pandora's box of strategic planning right now. All right.
Yeah.
So here are the four S's, but I'm going to really focus this down to the last S. We've got to do systems-level planning, which we do. I mean, the districts are finalizing their budgets, but, you know, kind of a new wrinkle this year is going to be the American Rescue Plan money. We've got to do school planning. We've got to look at the staff. That's the third S. And we've got to look at the students. But let me go to the students, all right? We
sure.
have a process that we do in, you know, right now I'm working in 20 schools on the School Climate Transformation Grant amongst my other consulting all over the world. And we're doing a process right now that we call the Get-Go process, G-E-T-G-O. And here it is in a snapshot. What we're doing is we're taking the student data management system, and we are integrating it into a spreadsheet, and we're collecting all of the data on every student in the school district, focusing on grade level or instructional level discussions. Grade level, obviously, in a K, maybe 8 format. 9 through 12 in the high school, we're looking at instructional level because some students take courses at the freshman or sophomore. They kind of have a mixed bag. But we take all of the data. We're taking the academic data, not just the state proficiency test, but the interim assessments, looking at the grades, looking at Acadian scores and all of the different interim assessment platforms that are out there. We're looking at the discipline data. We're looking at the attendance data. We're looking at kids on IEPs, 504 plans. And we're collecting all this data in a spreadsheet. And then we're kind of synthesizing this data. And we identify the students in four groups. And again, these are not self-fulfilling prophecies. These are based on the data. We identify the students who are what we call the get-go students, students who need or may need immediate interventions and in what areas on the first day of the school year. And students on IEPs and students on 504 plans.
Wait a minute, let me stop you. I just want to ask you one thing. Interventions on what? Are we talking about psychological intervention, social intervention, academic intervention? When you say that, what are we talking about?
Any school-based intervention, whether it's academic, social, emotional, behavioral, and if they want to include community-based, you know, social, emotional counseling as kind of a sidebar, they can do it. But the point is that the get-go students are students who need immediate interventions on the first day of school. Now, again, these students may be the students that we're targeting also during the summer with the American Rescue Plan money. These may be the students that we might be using ARP money to hire, if they're available, hire the counselors, the psychologists, the social workers during the summer to provide some of the counseling and support to these students. All right, so the get-go students are identified. The at-risk students are students that we've worked with, again, academic, social, emotional, behavioral, even including attendance, where the next year's teachers need to know kind of the lessons learned about these students before the first day of the new school year. So these kids don't need immediate interventions, but next year's teachers need to know what interventions last year worked, which ones didn't work, what did we have to do in terms of grouping, differentiated instruction. The check-in kids are kids that need a safety net. And, you know, the attendance is probably the best example. We'll have, because of this process, an attendance and a tardy hot sheet, a red flag list of kids
that we can
start to program for during the summer for the beginning of the school year. And then the vast majority of the kids are going to be no problem kids, kids that are going to transition to next year with basically the same services and supports in the general education setting that they got this year. But the point of this, Larry, and a critical point right now, is every school district in the country is going to have to write a plan to be able to access their American Rescue Plan money. We know this. I worked at the Arkansas Department of Education for 13 years during ERA. And we know that's going to happen. This is the data that's going to go into that plan. But this is also the information and the decision-making that are going to identify which students should go into what classes in what configurations, which kids need services, support, strategies, and programs, and maybe, for example, the fifth graders going to the sixth grade where they're transitioning into a new building. Well, we've got to make sure that the services that the rising sixth graders need, or for example, the rising ninth graders, we've got to make sure that the services follow the kids and the kids' needs. And we can't do this in August and September. That's why we've got to
good
do
point.
It now.
And actually, you made a good point. I wrote this down as you were talking. All right? We've got to do this now. And I don't know about Arkansas per se, but I know like Florida and some of the southern states, school ends at basically the beginning of June.
Right.
All right, and then, you know, they go back in August as opposed to up here in the north where it's like a June 28th or something and they come back after Labor Day, okay? So my question is we only have a finite amount of time, particularly, I'll say, in like a Florida district. I know Florida ends earlier, okay? What about Arkansas? When do they end, you know? When does Arkansas finish?
Boy, you know, I'm not sure. I think it's probably going into the early part of June.
Okay, so that's the same basic thing. So my point is we are now kind of running, we're in a finite amount of time
right
now, okay? And then you've got the summer, and I'll say what I said before, okay? The teachers have been run ragged this year, okay? You don't have to get into that. We know it. And they need some time off, too. They need to clear their heads. And you said getting old, and I agree with everything you said. My question I'm asking a long way, who's going to do all this? How do we get the information flowing back and forth between the teacher and the school administrator? How do we do that? I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. Obviously, we need to do this. Now the question is, how do we do it? All right. And I think you're working with a district that's actually making this happen. I'm not sure
what
it sounded
yes.
like. It. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's a how we do it, and then there's a question of prioritization, and then there's a question of reality. All right, so the how.
Yeah.
And you know, Larry,
well,
I don't come on your program to sell things, okay? But, you know, we've been doing this get-go process now for 15-plus years, okay? I've done it in hundreds of schools
Project
across
Achieve.
The country.
You mean
with
a Project
Achieve.
Achieve.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
we have got a get-go monograph that lays this whole thing out. We've got samples of – we can give people samples of the spreadsheets. Okay. So from the how perspective, we've got it down to basically a technical manual of step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that part of the how is done. The second part of the how is looking at each district's or school's data management or student information system. And for the ones that have really good systems, the ones that have got, you know, the usual platforms, but may add on things like EduClimber from Illuminate, okay, or PowerSchool, so some of those platforms, all you've got to do is to redesign the programming, and those are the tech people, and basically get the spreadsheets interfaced with the data management system so that all of the existing data immediately pulls into the spreadsheet. Now, again, we do what we can do this year. But in the planning of the process, this is something that could be, again, funded by American Rescue Plan money. So we do the best we can this year and plan for next year. But as an example, we've been working with the Michigan Data Hub because one of my grants, and in fact, I had two school climate grants in Michigan. We've been working with the Michigan Data Hub, which is the official Department of Education contractor for the state data management system. And they've been wonderful. We've integrated the Michigan Hub data into the spreadsheets. And quite honestly, I mean, it's basically public. I mean, this is not proprietary on my part. I'm giving this stuff away. So any district in Michigan could call up the Michigan Data Hub and have access to the data in this process. okay, if you've got edge climbing, if you've got, I mean, this is nothing magical about the spreadsheet, but, you know, how to do it, we've got to have the technical people to have the spreadsheet.
Exactly.
So that we're not putting all the burden on the teachers and the clerical staff to hand load all of this data in. But then the last part of it is what we're really talking about, once you've got the data, we're talking about, in essence, a grade-level meeting that could take as long as maybe 90 minutes or as short as 90 minutes. Because, as an example, here's the goal of the meeting, Larry. The goal of the meeting is for every student on the roster, for example, at the fifth grade, to simply, from a consensus perspective of the teachers, the support staff, and the administration, to get either a get-go, an at-risk, a check-in, or a no-problem designation. Okay, it's not about case studies about kids. It's about you've got all of the data. Decide, are these kids who need immediate interventions on the first day of school? Okay, so the meeting, if you've got 75% of your kids walking in that we know are no problem kids, we deal with those kids in 3 minutes at the meeting on a consent agenda.
Yeah.
We've just got a list of all the kids who we think are no problem, and if somebody disagrees, we cherry pick them off the list. But the rest of the kids, we're going around the table, and we're simply saying, what are they? Are they get-go, at-risk, no problem, or check-in kids? So the meetings don't last that long, and quite honestly, in the priority of life, why would you not do this? Why would you not invest 90 minutes in essence, an exit meeting, okay, a summary meeting of how the school year has gone and not collect all
right.
this data? So it's prioritization, but I'm not going to say it doesn't take time. It does take time. Everything takes time. And in the first year, the startup time is going to be longer. But if we get into this pattern, which my schools that I've worked with for 40-plus years, they're in the pattern. It's automatic pilot. It just becomes what you do in April and May.
And, Howie, what about for those schools? Let's just focus on those schools, okay, this year. And because this is the COVID year, all right? And again, I'm going to say what I said at the beginning. We all said there's a new normal. We're
right.
going to do things differently, blah, blah, blah. But we actually have to do that, all right? So concentrate on just your schools that you work with. How are they going to implement this? How are they going to find the time? And how soon will those dollars pop down, et cetera? Talk to me about that.
Well, my schools are setting up the meetings. I mean, what I've done with them is, you know, we did the prep work. You know, we did training of the administrators.
Yeah.
You know, we did training of administrators in the get-go process back in January. We made sure we had the data management system up and ready. But we did a short training, 45 minutes, of the classroom teachers.
Yeah.
We showed them the spreadsheet. We showed them the very few number of cells and columns that they had to fill out beforehand, and we've already scheduled the meeting. So it's a
Great.
Strategic planning process. But let me piggyback on a comment you made.
Do the teachers like being part of that process? I would assume they do, but I'm just curious. Do they like it?
Some of them, at the beginning, we have to kind of help them understand the benefits of the process. But here's bottom line. The bottom line is that for the kids who are get-go kids or at-risk kids, we ask the current year's teaching staff to write a very short briefing report. And it's a pay it forward. Every teacher that receives a student who has got some history, some lessons that we need to transfer to them, every teacher gets the spreadsheet of all the student data before the school year starts, and they get, as needed and as relevant, the briefing reports. So if I'm a 10th grade science teacher, I can go into my first period in September. And beforehand, I can look at the reading levels of the kids in my first period. Because if I'm a 10th grade science teacher and half of my kids are 2 years below grade level in reading,
right.
I better know that, because I'm going to have to modify my reading materials in order for the students to learn the science content. So ultimately, for the teachers that don't quite get it, and it's a few, okay, there's always a small percentage, once they experience the benefits of the process, they go, all right, I get this. This is a benefit. This is going to help my instruction for the next year.
It's good stuff, Howie. I got to tell you, what do you think the percentage this year? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, okay? And you've got your get-go kids, the kids who are tardy, et cetera, et cetera. I assume you're assuming all those numbers are going to go up. Am I correct?
Due to COVID. I'm assuming, but I want validation, and that's the point. We can't assume. Okay, I mean, we know that we've got kids who haven't been, quote, attending in a virtual world. Okay, but we don't know what that means. We hear about the pandemic slide, and yet we're getting different data from NIWA, from all, you know, the different the different assessment companies. We've got different data and different reports, and some of them saying, yeah, we've got some slide here. We've got some gaps academically, and others are saying no. All of that gives us a sense, for me, that we've got to, again, look at our kids at the local level, and let's not label pandemic slide. Let's just figure out the current functional academic skill level of the kids in literacy, math, oral, and written expression, and then decide if there were gaps, why are there gaps? Some of those gaps may have been pre-existing, Larry. They may have nothing to do with the pandemic. Some of them may be pandemic-related. But the point is if we know these data right now, we can program, we can align the resources, we can make sure that we've got classes where teachers can actually differentiate the instruction, and we can focus this as appropriate into the summer and into next year. We've got kids, we hear, oh, all these kids are traumatized. Well, let's validate it. I mean, I think some of our kids are more stressed than traumatized, but let's break this down. What are the social, emotional, and behavioral issues of our kids in this district, in these schools, and what are their service and support needs? How many of these kids, yes, they have needs, but if we do the right things in the first 3 weeks of the new school year, if we provide some of those services and supports during the summer using ARP money with our mental health people, the point is we've got to figure out what it is at our local level and not overgeneralize, and then start playing what I call intervention roulette, where we're throwing interventions at problems that we haven't defined.
Yeah, you know, and Howie, what percentage of districts, I mean, what you're describing makes, obviously you've been doing it for years, makes sense in any given year, this year perhaps even a little more. My question is, as you, and you work with a lot of school districts, you know a lot of people, okay, all over the country, all right, what percentage of schools actually actually do something like this, which makes a lot of sense, quite honestly? What do you think? What percentage?
I would say about probably a third of the school districts. But here's the asterisk.
It's higher than I thought.
Yeah. Well, but here's the asterisk. Most of those one-third are the administrators or the counselors. And I'm not being disrespectful or disparaging, okay? Okay. But it's the counselors and the administrators that are doing this as they're trying to block kids into the next year's classes, especially at the elementary and the middle school levels. Okay, and the point is that the classroom teachers have more knowledge, more experience, more interactions with these kids, even virtually, and that stuff doesn't get written down all the time, and we lose those pieces of data to really be able to craft the best service supports that kids need. So a lot of schools and districts are doing it, I would say about a third, but not at the level of kind of refinement. They don't use the data that we put into our spreadsheet.
Exactly.
And they're not doing this as a collective process. Now, let me make one more broad point, okay, because, you know, especially being on your program and so on. Let's talk for a second about a bigger picture issue of equity and funding. okay, we know that minority schools get $23 billion a year less in funding than the schools that are majority white. Okay? We know that there is a push in this country to try to balance and make the funding so that the programs and services are more equitable. This is, again, the data that helps us in this process, because if we know the students who have these more deep-seated needs that need more additional services and supports, then what we can do is we can do what I call core plus funding. But this year we're going to do core plus plus funding. The core plus funding is where we're making sure that everyone gets their equal amount of funding to get the programming that they need academically and behaviorally. But the plus is that the students who need more funding because they have more needs should get that funding. But now this year the additional plus is the American Rescue Plan money. And my fear right now, I mean, it's good news and bad news. I think that we're going to have more equitable systems because of we've got more consciousness right now, and there's going to be more money with the ARP money. My fear, though, is that we're going to create a better, more equitably financed system in this next year. And then when the ARP money goes away, then the new normal is going to go away also. And so I'm hoping that our districts absolutely start funding and start providing services and supports to the kids who most need it. And that's not to take anything away from all kids. But we know that kids from minority groups, we know the kids with disabilities, we know that our English second language kids, that we need more programming and services and supports for those kids, and they haven't gotten those because of the funding. So let's give them the funding, and if we use the American Rescue Plan money, that's great, but we've got a program for the long term and make sure when the ARP money goes away that we're not then going back to the old normal, that we've actually created a new normal.
Yeah, and what you just said is the true definition of equity, in that the people who need it the most get it, so that at the end, okay, we are all more equal. Okay,
yes.
It's not just an equal distribution of wealth to everybody; it's the people who need it get more, or get what they. You use the words get what they need.
Right.
Okay, and it's that simple. Otherwise, we're just wasting my time. I'm curious about this, though. Just a new normal. Howie, you've been around this base path for a long time. Okay, when we all talk about things are going to be different, do you really think they're going to be different next year? I mean, aside from what you're doing, I think what you're saying is wonderful. Okay, and I hope every school district jumps over to ProjectAchieve.net today. Okay. But my question is, as you talk to people, do they see, they all want it, but do they actually see something changing, a real sea change? What do you see?
You know, right
and
now.
It's probably an anecdotal answer, but what do you see?
And I'm going to be really honest. I mean,
please.
I don't think the educator at the local level is necessarily thinking about the new normal. They're thinking about the stark reality. I mean, this pandemic, I mean, we've got to look at what we've got to do. I mean, the early part of the pandemic, Larry, I mean, when we were a year ago, we had administrators deliver, and it was great. I mean, this is not a disparaging comment. The administrators were delivering food. They were making sure the kids had shelter. They were doing all of the bare necessities, the human rights kind of things that kids needed. And so that was their normal. And so if they were thinking on a global level that this is the new normal, then maybe they were thinking about it. But, you know, honestly, I think people have been in a survival mode. I think the things that we're talking about in this program, hopefully the things that will help those that are still in the survival mode, help them to start transitioning into, all right, now what do we do next? And to me, I don't necessarily like the labels. I don't know, live my life by labels. I think people have to deal with their own local kids, local staff, local resources, local needs, and they have to create their own normal. And that normal has ebbed and flowed over the course of at least the 40 years I've been in education. In sometimes slow ways and sometimes fast ways. So
it's going to be an amazing year. But what you're saying, okay, is so accurate, and we do have to compile the data. We have to understand the data, and I'm talking data both, analytical and anecdotal, okay?
Yeah.
And put that all together, and remember that education, teaching is a profession. And
right.
They take that data, okay, and make changes, all right, in what they're doing and for these kids. And you said something before which struck me. You said, a lot of this work is done by counselors. And you've been in that side of the business for years, okay? And the counselors are so overworked. You know, one counselor, 900 kids, right, or whatever those crazy numbers are. Where do you see that going, Howie? I mean, we need more counselors. It's that simple. I mean, we need more counselors. We need more school psychologists as well, which is your profession. But
we need more mental health people. And I think people are recognizing that. I mean, I just saw a study coming out of California as they were looking at the educational needs and, again, the American Rescue Plan money and so on. And they're going to try to really focus on the social, emotional, and behavioral as they should. And so I hope some of that money, and again, I hope it's not short-term money. I hope it turns into hard-line money. But, I mean, I think schools, based on the needs assessment, based on, as an example, again, the get-go process, I think schools and districts can say, all right, we need more counselors. We need more clinical social workers, school social workers. We need more school psychologists. We need more behavior specialists and so on. And so hopefully some of those monies will go to those needs also. And in addition, because the reality is in some of our communities, the money's available, but the people are not available.
That's exactly right.
You know, we've got to look
exactly
at our...
Right.
Yeah, we've got to look at our colleagues in the community mental health system. We've got to look, you know, as needed in telecounseling and the teletherapy kind of resources that are available. So, I mean, I think we've got to get creative. But, you know, I think your point is well taken, that we've got kids that the social, emotional, behavioral may have to be somewhat more addressed early on than the academics, because the social, emotional is going to complement the academic. But that's part of disaggregating where the kids are right now so that we're figuring that out.
Yeah, we got to do that, I'll tell you. And the other thing I just want to say, you know, to get more people involved in education, to get, if I may, the right people involved in education, okay, we need to look quite carefully at salaries, because salaries are what draw people to a profession besides their interest in it. Okay, and we got to plop some of that money into support to bring all the best and the brightest into the field. It's that simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And
you know,
even before that, Larry, we've got to help with our universities and our colleges and our online universities in terms of recruitment, because
some
of the issue is we don't have enough educators, related service people, and administrators in the educational pipeline relative to, you know, college, university, graduate school, and so on. So if they're not in the pipeline, then we can have great salaries, but the salaries go to waste because we don't have the people to pay them.
People. Well, so it's
a
vicious
ecological
cycle, because the
systemic
salaries will draw the people, you know?
Yes.
We'll figure it out, Howie. Not to worry, okay? We'll figure it out. Right? You got
we
a
will.
Good plan here, my friend. Everybody, projectachieve.net. That's Howie's organization, projectachieve.net. The new monograph is there, and all these things. You can talk to Howie, et cetera. It's terrific. Okay? We got to go. Thank you, my friend, Dr. Howie Knopf. It's a pleasure.
My pleasure to always. Take care of yourself, Larry.
You too. Thanks, Howie. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yep. Howie Knopf, projectachieve.net. There you go. Okay? Who could ask for anything more? We'll archive over at ace-ed.org, as we are the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you for listening.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.